Listen to Let It Happen on Saturdays at 1 p.m. till 2 p.m. for a little bit of psych, a little bit of pop, and a whole lot of... Only on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Hello, tis I, DJ Tangent, Queens alumnus and community member, host of Numbers with Wings on CFRC 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca, Sunday afternoons at 2 p.m. How did I get into this? Funnily enough, it was at a fundraising a couple of years ago, doing a dad joke contest with DJ Over Easy, then a couple of guest spots on his show, and they gave me my own show. Nothing beats the thrill of a live broadcast. I like to promote new Canadian and local music while also sharing songs from my past. Our funding drive runs from November to December 31st. Donations can be made via CFRC.ca. Thank you for your support of CFRC 101.9 FM.
CFRC's annual funding drive campaign is now underway through December 31st. Help us raise $25,000 to support our local arts and artists and keep our community informed with local news, concerts, and event listings on air and on our website. Visit CFRC.ca today and make your gift to Kingston's longest-running broadcaster serving our community since 1922. Get a tax receipt via Queen's University or get sweet CFRC swag and enter to win our raffle draws featuring gifts from amazing local donors. For every $5 donated, you get one more chance to win. Thank you for your support.
Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present a selection from Juno-nominated Maple Blues Award-winning local artist Miss Emily's new album, The Medicine, released on November 7th. Produced by Grammy winner Colin Linden, the album blends soul, blues, and roots with an all-star lineup, including players from Bob Dylan and Keb Moe's bands. Pairing her thunderous voice with songs of truth and resilience, Miss Emily channels two decades of raw experience into music that heals and uplifts. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visitkingston.music on the Instagram. In the meantime, stream The Medicine by Miss Emily on your favorite platforms and enjoy a selection from it called Stand Together, Band Together. Here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Knows you can learn to love if you can learn to hate. It takes more than one. knowing they know we know. Everybody here knows we got to get it together. 'Cause this is a moment of change and the children are watching and waiting. We've got to show them together. We're stronger than ever.
Good morning. It is 11 a.m. on Friday, November 28th, and you're tuned in to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and this is Kingston Currents. CFRC's news programming is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Another first-of-its-kind innovation from Kingston Health Sciences Center and Queen's University. A new 3D-printed surgical biopsy tool is changing the way scientists approach glioblastoma, a uniquely difficult-to-study and aggressive form of brain cancer. Neurosurgeon scientists and assistant professors Dr. James Persner and Dr. Teresa Persner, along with Queen's Engineering PhD candidate Caitlin Andrews, designed and patented a 3D surgical biopsy capsule, a tool used to take small tissue samples from brain tumors with precision. Published recently in the journal Operative Neurosurgery, this breakthrough has the potential to transform how brain tumors are studied and treated. Potential applications include more targeted radiation treatments, more precise and safer surgical decision-making, and new drug development informed by the most comprehensive molecular profiles of glioblastoma to date. Dr. Teresa Persner and engineering PhD candidate Caitlin Andrews sat down to share more about the development of this innovative tool. Well, to get started, glioblastoma, it's incredibly complex. I was wondering if you could describe what makes this cancer so uniquely difficult to study.
Yeah, it's a really, of all the cancers that I've tried to study, including pediatric and adult brain cancers, for me, it's by quite a margin the most difficult one to tackle, to even conceive of how we start tackling, let alone to tackle. And there's a few reasons for that. So first of all, it's really heterogeneous. So it's made up of many different types of populations of cells. And unfortunately, we've shown that those different types of cells can actually convert between each other. And so you can think you're trying to create, you're trying to find a target that you target with a drug. If that target can change at any time in response to your drug, it makes it very difficult. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that it's already all over the brain at the time of diagnosis. So if you look at an MRI, you see this round, bright circle, which is the tumor. But we know that back, you know, a long time ago, in the early days of neurosurgery, they actually took out the entire half of the brain that had the tumor in it, and it still came back on the other side of the brain. So it means that it's disseminated at diagnosis. And while, you know, there's this protective barrier in the brain called the blood-brain barrier that stops drugs and, you know, and toxins and bad things from getting into the brain. So it's good for your brain health. But when you're trying to get drugs into the brain, it prevents it from getting there. So where that big primary tumor is, that barrier is broken down. But for the rest of the brain, it's still very much intact. And so those are sort of the three reasons why this is just an incredibly difficult cancer to fight.
Mm-hmm. And perhaps this will be more for Caitlin, but I was wondering if you could explain in simple terms what this new 3D printed biopsy capsule is and what kind of impact it's going to have on research and treatment.
Absolutely. So as you said, it's a small 3D printed capsule. And the way it kind of works is that it adapts to the tip of pre-existing surgical suction. And then there's a little piston on the inside. And so when the suction's applied, the piston gets pulled up and that traps a sample of brain in the capsule itself. We can actually correlate our sample locations to the preoperative scans through intraoperative neuronavigation. So we can mark each point where the samples are taken from, and it's fully self-contained. So there's no cross-contamination between the samples at all. There's no risk of it damaging. It holds the integrity of the sample together. And that allows us to have like a very clear picture of that exact precise sample location going forward for research, which anyone who does genomics or transcriptomics research understands is very important. The more information we have and the less risk of contamination, the better our sample quality. And so all these factors together really let us have a very precise view of the different regions of the tumors that we're interested in, which is something that we haven't been able to really do easily with standard technologies. It could be done in not the safest ways, which obviously patient priority is our safety, or is our priority. Patient safety is our priority. But it allows us to safely capture all these samples in a quick and efficient way that's not too much of a stress for the surgical team. So always the goal is shortest operation possible with as little risk to the patient as possible.
Mm-hmm. And are you guys already using this in your research right now?
Yeah, so we've used it in two patients so far. In our publication, we had a clinical validation where we used it versus the standard of care in a human glioblastoma tumor. And we've since also used it for other cases, and we're hoping to expand its use through the next year.
Mm-hmm. And I know the process of getting something patented is quite a journey. I was wondering if you could speak a bit to that, how it all kind of began and how your team ended up here where you're now using this in research.
Yeah, I think it is. So device development can be a really long and arduous journey, especially getting it from concept to human. And so we were just very thoughtful from the very beginning on how we developed it, so that we developed it in a way that would ultimately be safe for human use. And acceptable from an ethics perspective. So from the very beginning, when we were designing the capsule itself, we took into account things like, you know, are these FDA approved materials? Are we creating it in a way that is very simple and easy to use with humans? And then when it came to IP, you know, what is the IP landscape? Are there devices out there that are very similar to ours that would preclude us from eventually filing a patent? And so from the very initial design steps, we took into account the eventual commercialization and the human readiness of the materials we were using. And so we got to human use very, very quickly, I think because the end goal was embedded in the very initial design process.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think it means for Kingston Health Sciences Center and Queens to kind of be at the center of this global first innovation?
I think it's great. Yeah. I think we're, Kingston's a small town in a lot of regards, right? And so Queens kind of, you know, it punches above its weight with Queens. And so whenever we can sort of raise a flag and say, hey, we're doing something innovative and novel, it just puts us on the global stage. And so I think it's great. And I think that the more innovation we can do, the more, you know, kind of first that we can do, it also creates greater confidence in the patient population that they're going somewhere that has all the technology and all the resources and expertise required to receive, you know, exceptional care. And for me, at the end of the day, I love science. It's, you know, it's one of my favorite parts of my whole job is doing science. But I'm here for the patients, right? And to build that confidence in them and to see their confidence in us and our program from a clinical perspective, but also an innovation perspective, it's very gratifying.
Yeah. And I'm curious, Caitlin, since you're still a student, how does it feel to, you know, have this tool that you worked on being out there?
Yeah, it's definitely been a really interesting experience to be a part of. The tool development all started during my undergrad. I've been at Queens for far too long now. And getting to see it move through the stages at the speed that it did, to now having used in patients, it's really been an amazing experience, to be honest. And it's an amazing team to have worked with, everyone from Jamie and Teresa, who are obviously like the spearheads of campaigning for it and helping with its development and providing all the user feedback, to even the other neurosurgeons. So in the early stages, when we were doing preclinical validation, we had the neurosurgery team here compare, as well as grad students, between the standard of care tools and our novel tool using porcine brain as our model. And so getting everybody's actual feedback from not just Jamie and Teresa, but the actual, like every member of the neurosurgery team here, is a really unique opportunity. So it's been super interesting to be a part of, and I'm super grateful for the opportunity to have taken part in it.
Mm-hmm. And moving forward, you're building those partnerships with other hospitals, hoping to get this tool out there. What are your hopes for the next few years in this department?
I mean, so the tool was developed to do science, right? We didn't develop the tool because we just wanted a tool. We wanted a tool so that we could access tissue in a way and with a granularity and precision that wasn't otherwise possible. And so now the next 5 years, part of it will be, you know, if other people want the tool, more than happy to share it. We create it in a way where it's 30 cents a capsule, and we can literally send off an email to another institution. They can print it off. And we actually did that. We tried it with SickKids, and they printed off some of our capsules, right? So it's extremely mobile. We'd be delighted to share it with anyone. But what I'm really excited about is now the science that will come out of it. So it's kind of a little bit TBD. We'll see what happens. But that it was built to do science, not just to be a tool in itself.
Once again, that was neurosurgeon scientist Dr. Teresa Persner and Queen's Engineering PhD candidate Caitlin Andrews on a new 3D-printed surgical biopsy tool changing the way scientists approach glioblastoma. As Persner and Andrews mentioned, the capsule is already being used in operating rooms at KHSC, making Kingston the only medical center in the world currently using this new tool. As for what comes next, the Kingston team is now building partnerships with other hospitals across Ontario to expand its reach. Work is also underway to build a state-of-the-art tissue bank facility that can store samples from patients across Canada, positioning Kingston as a global hub for brain tumor research.
This year's Kingston General Hospital Auxiliary's Teddy Bear campaign has officially kicked off. Since the annual campaign launched in 2004, it has raised more than $500,000, providing funds for new equipment for the pediatric program at Kingston Health Sciences Center. Last year, more than 300 teddy bears were delivered to young patients, and community donations brought the hospital past the midway point of its two-year, $55,000 goal for a point-of-care ultrasound machine. This year's campaign runs until December 23rd, with the goal of crossing the finish line on that two-year commitment. Chelsea Reynolds, president of the KGH Auxiliary, sat down with CFRC to chat about this year's campaign. Well, to start us off, so great to have you back. For folks who aren't familiar, I was wondering if you could give us a refresher on what the KGH Teddy Bear campaign is all about.
So the Teddy Bear campaign is something that we've been running. This is our 22nd year, and it's a fundraiser that we do, that the auxiliary runs, to raise funds for pediatric care in our KGH site. The bears are available for sponsorship. It costs $100, and all the funds raised goes for equipment for pediatric units.
Mm-hmm. And this is the second year fundraising for a point-of-care ultrasound machine.
Yes.
In the pediatric unit. I was wondering if you could speak a bit about that goal, where we're at, how far we have to go.
Yeah. So the last year we made a 2-year commitment and the cost was $55,000. Last year we raised $28,000. So we just need to get basically the same amount again. And then the ultrasound machine stays on the pediatric units, which makes it easier for the families and the patients in particular, because they don't have to go somewhere. They don't have to be wheeled downstairs. They don't have to go where they're not as comfortable, they're not as familiar, and the families can stay right with them. And for the staff, it's right there on the floor. Hopefully they can get results a little bit quicker. Everyone's just a little more at ease.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned last time we chatted, you know, that second year, sometimes it's a little harder to get that push.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you could speak to that, give some words of inspiration for the community.
Yeah. So last year when we first started talking about it, it's new and it's exciting and, oh, we have this big goal. Now this year it sort of feels like, okay, well, now we're trying to finish that off. But it's, you know, it's a great goal to think about that being in the hospital and available for use for our staff and for the benefit of our patients.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to get this, again, awesome piece of equipment, but I was wondering if you could also speak to that immediate impact of, you know, being able to deliver the bears at Christmas time and that kind of aspect of it.
Yeah, so the bears will get delivered, I think it's December 19th, 20th sort of thing. And so that's to any young people who are in the hospital at KGH, at Hotel Du. We also partner with a hospital and Moose Factory, Winnebago. And so bears are delivered there. And I was actually just approached last week. I was out for a walk and a dad and two daughters came up to me. And 3 years ago, one of the daughters had been in having surgery close to Christmas and she had received a bear. And they recognized me and said, "Are you the teddy bear lady?" And they still remembered that and it had made such an impact on them. And she's doing well, which was lovely. So to hear that 3 years on, and she said, "Thanks again for the bear." It was really, really nice.
Mm-hmm. Yes, people are really making that immediate impact right in our community.
Yes, right. Because, I mean, nobody wants to be in the hospital ever. Nobody wants to be in the hospital at Christmas time, and especially if you're a small person. So to get that bear is just, you know, a little bit of something extra.
Mm-hmm. And for folks who are returning donors or first-time donors, how can they get involved?
The easiest way to donate is through Canada Helps. If you just look up KGH Auxiliary and then the Teddy Bear Campaign through there, that's you can direct your funds directly to that. You can also go on the KHSC website and make your way to our page. We have a form. You can fill that out. But Canada Helps is probably the easiest for people this way.
The 2025 Bears will be available for sponsorship until December 23rd and can be purchased by calling 613-549-6666, extension 6352, completing the donation brochure, or by visiting Canada Helps and selecting Teddy Bear Campaign 2025 in the donation details section. A conservation project in Eastern Ontario has earned major recognition. Watersheds Canada, a national nonprofit dedicated to protecting Canada's lakes and rivers, took home the Small Project Conservation Award at this year's Water Canada Awards for a winter restoration project on Big Clear Lake in central Frontenac Township. The community-driven project rebuilt a crucial walleye spawning bed, supporting an important native species and a cornerstone of the local fishery. This project is one of 68 completed across 44 bodies of water in central eastern Ontario since the Fish Habitat Program began 12 years ago. I spoke with Melissa Dakers, Habitat and Stewardship Program Manager with Watersheds Canada, about what this award has meant for her and her team and the work behind the project.
It celebrates not just our staff, but all the volunteers, the partners, and Indigenous leaders that we've worked with who make this work possible. It's a national acknowledgement that community-based conservation really works, and it gives everyone involved a lot of encouragement to keep going.
And the winning project was the winter walleye spawning bed restoration project on Big Clear Lake. I was wondering if you could give us a bit of an overview of what that was all about and why it needed to be done.
Yes. So Big Clear Lake, it has a historic walleye spawning bed that had become degraded over some time. We started this project actually in 2023 with our team and volunteers washing the spawning bed with high pressure water pumps and hoses. We scrubbed the rocks with brushes and removed all the algae and silt from the rock substrate. And then the second part of our project was actually supposed to take place the winter of 2024. But if you remember, last winter, it was extremely mild and the ice safety was actually a major concern for us. So we rescheduled it to 2025 to keep everyone safe. And so last winter in February, our team, along with our partners and local volunteers, we restored the site by laying down 17 tons of washed, clean river rock over the frozen lake, right above the spawning bed. And that rock actually creates the perfect spawning habitat for walleye, which are an important native species and a big part of the local ecosystem and fishery. It was cold, hard work, but the results will help keep this lake healthy for years to come. And this project was actually supported by Environment and Climate Change Canada's Environmental Damages Fund, with permits and approvals from the Ontario Ministry of Natural Resources and Fisheries and Oceans Canada. And it's one of 68 habitat projects that we've completed through our fish habitat program over the last 12 years.
Wow, 68, geez. And I mean, we've seen a decline in fish habitat across central and eastern Ontario. How does this project and all those other projects you guys are working on kind of help turn the tides?
Projects like this, they not only bring the community together, but what we're trying to do is make people aware of how helping to restore fish habitat can actually change a fishery on a lake. So by also planting your shorelines and reducing erosion so that there's not as much silt on the spawning beds, we can make a really big impact to our fisheries.
Mm-hmm. And you kind of got into this, but I was wondering if you could speak a bit more to how local volunteers and community partners were involved in this project.
Yeah, so honestly, this community was incredible, as are all the communities that we work with. But local volunteers, they brought their snow machines, their ATVs, and a ton of energy out onto a frozen lake to help move and spread the rock amidst a snowstorm. We were also closely working with the Big Clear Lake Association. GE Mattson and Sons Construction were there and donated time. And so were the Shabbat-Obadjuan First Nation. And Chief Doreen Davis even joined us that day, and she called it one of the building blocks of your life, which really captured how meaningful it actually was to have us all there. That shared spirit, people coming together to care for the land and the water, that's what makes these projects so powerful.
Mm-hmm. And moving forward, how can folks in the Kingston region get involved with projects like this and support your initiatives?
Yeah, there's lots of ways that people can get involved. People can visit watersheds.ca to learn about upcoming volunteer opportunities, shoreline restoration projects, or ways to donate to future fish habitat work. We are a nonprofit national charity located in Perth, Ontario, and we raise all our funds through donations, foundations, and grants. So personal donations are really greatly appreciated. And then even small actions at home, like keeping your shoreline natural or reducing runoff by planting native plants on a shoreline, can make a really big difference for water quality and for fish habitat. Every bit of local involvement helps protect the lakes and rivers that we all enjoy.
Once again, that was Melissa Dakers with Watersheds Canada. To learn more about their fish habitat programs, volunteer opportunities, and other ways to support future restoration work, you can visit watersheds.ca. Before we get into more local news, I'm going to turn to our weather and traffic report for today, featuring CFRC's Jesse Bell.
This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Friday, November 28th, 1 is your daytime high with a little bit of sunshine in the forecast, but it's going to be very chilly, feeling closer to -7, so bundle up when you're out and about. Saturday, November 29th, high of 0, and it's not going to be as bone-chillingly cold, just a low of -2 that will feel like -2. Sunday, November 30th, daytime high of 3 degrees, mix of rain and snow in the forecast, dropping down to just below freezing overnight. And then the start of December, Monday, December 1st, daytime high of 5 degrees with a 63% chance of precipitation. This is Jesse Bell with your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. We begin with road closures. Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Albert Street, Princess to Mac is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. Berry Street, King to Stewart is closed November 25th to 26th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. each day for the removal of a large tree. Berry Street, Queen to Colborne, closed for construction at 283 Queen Street. Earl Street, Collingwood to Toronto, closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Raglan Road, Division 2 Main, closed until November 30th from 7:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. each day for gas main installation. Toronto Street, Durham to Park, is closed until November 28th for installation of new water, sanitary, and storm services. And Victoria Street, Union 2 Johnson, is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Here are some other delays to be aware of. Bay Ridge Drive, Milford to Henderson, expect delays for the construction of new active transportation infrastructure. Catwoods Drive, Centennial to Gardeners, expect delays for the construction of a new multi-use pathway. Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club, expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main. Traffic will be reduced to one lane in each direction. Montreal Street at John Counter, expect delays for upgrades to the intersection, including new lighting, traffic signals, lanes, paving, and signage. Trudell Road, development to Danbury, expect delays while a contractor completes road and sidewalk improvements. And Victoria Street and Earl Street, expect delays while a contractor mobilizes the site to start work on the second phase of reconstruction of sewer, water main, sidewalks, and road.
Thank you, Jesse. Now back to more local news. The holiday season is starting to take shape downtown, and with it comes one of the Downtown Kingston BIA's annual traditions, a new pewter ornament collection. Now in its 31st year, the series continues to document some of the city's most iconic buildings and landmarks. This year's lineup includes three new buildings, a well-loved park, and a piece marking a major local college anniversary. I spoke with Jan McDonald, Downtown Kingston's Director of Events, about this year's collection. So the collection has been part of our holiday season for over 30 years now. I was wondering if you could tell us a bit about the tradition and what you think makes it such a hit every year.
I know, it's kind of crazy that every year we still find buildings and these sort of cultural sort of assets in the city to make into pewter ornaments. You'd think after this is our 31st year that we would sort of run out of buildings. But no, Kingston is so historically rich that, you know, it seems like we have an endless pool to choose from. So, so we've been doing this for 31 years, five ornaments every year. We get suggestions. We have so many customers who have every single collection from year one. They get super excited whenever we would do the new release. But we get suggestions all the time, a lot of suggestions from Kingstonians, which is great. It's always a fun thing to do. I think it's really nice for locals, but then, you know, we have a lot of collections that are like Queen's buildings or, you know, nice sort of commemorative things that you can give as gifts, which is really great. So if you have, you know, kids attending Queens, it's a nice little Christmas gift. We do things like, tragically hip collections. So if you have like hip fans in your family, I think they give really well as gifts. And then it's just sort of a nice thing to sort of recognize those places in the city that have, you know, special meaning for you.
Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, this lineup includes a lot of iconic places in Kingston. I was wondering if you could walk us through the 2025 releases and maybe a bit about how some of them were chosen.
So this year's lineup is really wonderful. So we start out next week with the Bages Brewery, which is a beautiful building that has since been turned into condos. But it is on Wellington Street. Following that, we have Louise House. So Louise House is on Johnson Street, and it's sort of an architectural treasure. It began as a new schoolhouse for the Kingston Board of Trustees. Just a really, really beautiful building. Queen students would especially recognize this building because it is now the Starbucks on the corner of Johnson and Division. So that's the building we're talking about there. The Broom Factory is week three. So one of the main, I would say, live music venues in the city used to be a Broom Factory. And now, like I said, it operates as a live music venue. It's also it also houses like the Kingston Canadian Film Festival crew. So lots of sort of creative brains in that building. Fourth week is McBurney Park, or more commonly known as Skeleton Park. So Skeleton Park is, you know, definitely one of the most popular sort of gathering spaces for young families in the downtown core. They do a wonderful festival every year, Skeleton Park Arts Fest. And it has like a pretty fun history. It was established in 1800s as Kingston's upper burial ground, which is sort of why it got the sort of Skeleton Park name, but very, very cool. And then finally, week five, it's sort of the ornament itself has a number of different sort of iconic emblems of the Royal Military College of Canada. So it's RC, the RMC ornament, which again, we've done a lot with Queens. We have in the past sort of touched on some of the RMC monuments, but this is sort of an all-encompassing like RMC ornament because their 150th anniversary is coming up. So that's this year's lineup.
Awesome. And I'm sure a lot of these were community suggestions, but I was wondering if any of these were like people have been asking for them like crazy and you guys were like, we have to do it this year.
Definitely Skeleton Park, we get a lot. That one's a little bit tricky. Buildings are a little bit more simple in terms of rendering into an ornament. Skeleton Park is a very cool one because we sort of used an aerial shot to sort of fashion the ornament. But the Skeleton Park community, sort of that community, they're very, it's a very close-knit community. And so, yeah, we get a lot of suggestions for that one. And then I'm not sure how the other ones came in. I think we always look for buildings that have some kind of historical significance so that we can tell the story of the building. I do think it was someone from Queens who talked about the Starbucks building though, because yeah, we know it as the Starbucks, but it's kind of cool that, that it started as a schoolhouse.
Mm-hmm. You're also including past ornaments this year, which is a new kind of thing. I was wondering if you could talk a bit about that. Yeah. What made you guys this year decide to offer that?
Yeah, so on our website, which is downtownkingston.ca, we still have ornaments available from past collections. So we definitely, you know, popular ones go pretty quick. And so, you know, they tend to sell out pretty fast. But it's kind of surprising going back 31 years what we still have in our catalog here. And so you can go on the website and take a look through the years. Maybe you're trying to fill in some gaps in your own collection or just kind of see what we've done historically. But those are available to purchase. They're around $8 each. And then we've put together little themed collections this year. So we have one that's a Tragically Hip themed collection. So in there, it would be the Gord Downie Pier, the Hip sign at Slush Puppy Place, things like that. We've also done one which is sort of those classic Kingston sort of buildings. When you know, you come to Kingston, you have to see City Hall, you have to see Kingston Penn, that sort of thing. So really fun, cute little themed collections that are also available on the website.
You also have that connection where folks bring their downtown shopping receipts. I was wondering if you could just talk about that connection to supporting local business as well.
Yeah. So the whole program started, like you said, we are a BIA, and so it's really important that we support our member businesses and try to drive business and keep downtown as lively and vibrant as we can. And so in order to purchase the new collection, so the old collections are available on our website, as I mentioned. The new collection, you have to present $25 worth of receipts from downtown. So it could be a cafe, could be a retail shop, it could be your dentist, it could be food basics like the grocery store. So any downtown business, you present $25 worth of receipts and the ornament is $10. So, and the ornaments are available in three locations starting on Monday. So they're available at the Grand Theater box office. They're available at the Slush Puppy Place box office and the Visitor Information Center, which is across from City Hall. So you go in with your $25 worth of receipts and the ornaments are available to you at $10.
You've been listening to Jan McDonald with the Downtown Kingston BIA on this year's new pewter ornament collection. For more details on the designs and the release schedule, more information is available at downtownkingston.ca. Diving into some headlines directly from the city of Kingston, we start with a reminder for drivers, Kingston's weather-based winter parking restrictions go into effect on Monday, December 1st. Through December and March, overnight on-street parking will only be banned when winter weather requires it. But come January and February, the rules tighten. Parking is not allowed overnight, no matter the forecast. When a ban is in place, parking is prohibited between 1 a.m. and 7 a.m. or midnight to 7 around Kingston General Hospital. Vehicles left on the street risk tickets and towing. The city says the approach keeps roads clear for plows while allowing more flexibility early and late in the season. Parking bans will be announced the afternoon before on the city's website, newsletter, and social media. Staying with winter safety, Utilities Kingston is reminding residents to stay alert when it comes to natural gas use and carbon monoxide risks. If you ever notice that strong rotten egg smell, hear hissing near gas lines, or see dead vegetation around underground pipes, leave immediately and avoid anything that could spark. Once safely outside, call Utilities Kingston at 613-546-1181. They're also reminding homeowners to check their carbon monoxide alarms. Carbon monoxide is colorless, odorless, and can be deadly. Starting January 1st, 2026, Ontario's fire code will require carbon monoxide alarms on every story of existing homes. The city urges residents to get ahead of the change now and book annual inspections with a TSSA-registered technician. In City Hall news, changes are underway for accessible transportation. Following ongoing concerns with the Kingston Area Taxi Licensing Commission, Council has replaced its members ahead of next year's transition that will bring taxi regulation under the City of Kingston. Council says the shift was necessary to ensure continuity of the subsidized accessible taxi program. That $3.50 fare for qualified riders remains in place, but the city warns the current model could cost more than $830,000 a year if left unchanged. The city will now limit the number of subsidized trips, while additional rides will continue at full fare. Residents who use the service are being asked to register through Kingston Access Bus. Taxi Commission ID cards won't be valid after January 1st. Meanwhile, Kingston Access Bus is proposing to expand service in 2026, including nearly 5,000 more service hours during peak times. Transit riders will also see a change next week. Starting December 1st, Kingston Transit's N1 night service route will be adjusted to better serve Queen's University, KGH, the downtown, and employment areas along Midland and Cataraqui Woods. Because the Cataraqui Center is closed during N1 operating hours, the route will now shift toward nearby commercial areas and continue to service stops at Princess and Midland. In a final message from the city, a celebration of creativity at City Hall earlier this week, where the 2025 Mayor's Arts Awards honored three standout creators and one cultural organization. This year's recipients include digital performance innovator Jesse McMillan, muralist Aaron Forsyth, and dancer and community arts leader Camille Spencer. The Arts Champion Award went to Le Centre Culturel Frontenac, recognized for its leadership and growing Kingston's Francophone arts community. Mayor Brian Patterson says the awards celebrate the people who make Kingston a place where creativity flourishes. Before we wrap up this morning, we're going to run through your Friday forecast, a roundup of just some of the events Kingston has to offer this weekend. At 5:30 tonight, Sutherland Hall hosts the Black Innovation and Tech Futures Forum, a discussion and networking opportunity at the intersection of technology and equity. If you're looking to get into the holiday spirit, there's Baroque Christmas treats at St. James Anglican Church from 5:15 to 7 p.m., with traditional music in a beautiful setting. And theater fans can once again catch Guys and Dolls at Le Sesame Theater at 7:30 p.m. Also tonight, Ruben in the Dark performs at the Royal Canadian Legion Branch 160 at 7:30 p.m. And finally, the Wolf Island Records Musical Review is at Hotel Wolf Island at 8 p.m. with a showcase of labeled talent. Guys and Dolls continues on Saturday with a 2 p.m. matinee and a 7:30 evening show. Also at 7:30 on Saturday at the Kingston Grand Theater, Barca, an innovative and artistic stage performance. To finish off the night on Saturday, you can head to Time Out Bar for karaoke at 9 p.m. On Sunday, this is the last chance to catch Guys and Dolls musical at La Sesame Theater at 2 p.m. There's the Christmas Family Sing-Along at the Spire at 2:30 p.m., an all-ages event, so bring your kids and get into the holiday spirit. And finally, as always, wrapping up the week, you can head to karaoke at the Toucan starting at 10:30 p.m. As for concerts this weekend, there's something for everyone. Starting with tonight at the Broom Factory, Charlie Houston's Big After I Die tour is with Last Call and LHRK at 7 p.m. At the RCHA, Kent Nicholson kicks off TGIF Happy Hour at 4 p.m., followed by $5 dates at 8 p.m. Also on Friday, Ontario Festival Small Hands brings us Ben Kaplan at the Cove Inn starting at 6 p.m. Also at 6 p.m., Scott Owens performs at the Creekside Bar. Another triple bill at the Mansion tonight with Matt Campbell, Otis Strange, and Luster at 8 p.m. Also at the Mansion tonight in the Wine Cellar, catch House in the Mansion Volume 3 starting at 9 p.m. And to round out tonight with some sweet acoustics, Spencer Evans is at Time Out Bar starting at 7 p.m. Starting off strong on Saturday, November 29th, Stephen Stanley, No Electric, and Tanya Joy are at the Broom Factory starting at 7:30 p.m. Also on Saturday is GovFest featuring Dewey Roadkill, Retirement Plan, Doing Okay, Veritones, Sweet Pete in the Heat, and Lowry at the Buckle from 6 p.m. to midnight. This is a charity event, and the money raised through GovFest Kingston is specifically used to fund the local KFLNA United Way, which supports local community projects and provides support systems for vulnerable community members. In addition, 50% of the proceeds from GovFest are used to fund Ryan's Well Foundation, which works to provide consistent access to safe drinking water in developing regions worldwide. Tickets are $20 in advance and $25 at the door. There will also be a silent auction, door prizes, and a raffle from local businesses. So swing by the Buckle from 6 p.m. to midnight on Saturday and support some good music for a good cause. Also on Saturday, the Isabel Voices present a festive celebration at the Isabel Bader Center starting at 2:30 p.m. On Sunday, it's Sunday Fun Day Chicken Pickin' at the Cove Inn from 1 to 4 p.m. And the Queen's Dance Club has their mid-year recital at the Kingston Grand starting at 6 p.m. Once again, those are just a few of the concerts and events taking place this weekend. To see our full listing of concerts and events, you can check out our events and concerts calendars at cfrc.ca. To add to our on-air and online calendars, you can reach out via cfrc.ca or at CFRC Music on Instagram using the link tree in our bio. That is all things current in Kingston for this week. Thank you for listening to CFRC's local news programming, brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. To listen on the go and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear.
Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office and supported by your friends at Modern City Taxi, we're pleased to present a single by Kentucky called Born American, a song that is both a question and a reflection, urging listeners to consider the human impact of our world's shifting borders and systems. With vivid imagery and raw emotion, the song and its accompanying video invite you to feel deeply and reflect on compassion and understanding. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Born American by Kentucky on your favorite platforms and enjoy it here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
In the hospital, all alone in the middle of the night, head like a foreign crown. Generosity, his sense of community, his personal commitment to personal responsibility. These are just a few of the ways the people in his town could tell that he was born American. He was quick to fight, but he was also quick to forgive. He was cool, and he was handsome. To the street and called to defend their sons and daughters from the men with the masks and the jackets that say ICE, you better come with me, 'cause your birthright in the land of the free man, it won't mean a damn, it'll mean nothing, it won't mean nothing.
Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office and supported by Modern City Taxi, we're pleased to present a selection from local act Left Handed Archer's newly released third album, A Blue Arctic. Connor Barnes and Peter Sanfilippo return with a tight 33-second record of emotive and wide-ranging electronica, combining beats both menacing and relaxing. For fans of David Lynch, ambient Aphex Twin, Kelly Lee Owens, and The Field, you can enjoy some music while oceans rise and glaciers melt. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via Visit Kingston.Music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream A Blue Arctic now on your favorite platforms and enjoy a selection from it called Miami Sinking Into the Ocean here now with us on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Hi there, this is Nishan Tung here from CFRC 101.9 FM. I work at the Agnes Etherington Art Center on campus and recently began volunteering at the station just a few months ago. What I love most about CFRC is the incredibly unique programming run by students, creatives, and community.